Make America Great Again. Well, it's a slogan that will live on in infamy, and for millions of Americans who felt left behind as the factories closed and jobs moved abroad, it worked. It was the catchphrase of Donald Trump, the billionaire business owner who had become the hero of the working man and woman. But there's a big contradiction at the heart of that. It was the billionaires in America, the people of Trump's circle, who closed the factories and who moved them abroad. So why then was it Donald Trump who saw the working class support him? Ray Hoegler is a professor of management at Colorado State University. He is here in Ireland this week to speak at DCU about the relationship between Trump and the American workers. Ray, good morning.
Good morning.
There is that inherent contradiction. Can you explain why the blue-collar worker thinks that Donald Trump, the ultimate billionaire and capitalist, is going to help them?
Because he made promises he can't possibly keep. Part of his promise was to bring back, for example, coal mining jobs. Most economists agree that will never happen. The other part is that he appealed to a very deep sense of malaise in the American working class, and that malaise is caused by 20 years of downturn. I don't believe that Donald Trump represents a success of his philosophy. I think what happened with Trump was a failure of the American labor movement through no fault of their own. But had they organized more vigorously, had union membership stayed at density levels that it was in 1980, we might have had a different outcome. No Donald Trump.
Was it the undermining of the trade union movement that led to this theory building up that somehow they could make America great again and there was nobody to lead them differently?
Yes, because there are so many disgruntled American workers. Since 1980, real wages in the United States have been collapsing for middle-class workers. There's a story in the New York Times recently about a man who worked in a meatpacking plant in Iowa. He started out making $16 an hour. The story was about his retirement. He's still making $16 an hour. And as the story pointed out, had his wages increased at the same rate as inflation, he would have been making $47 an hour. I believe what happened was that as trade unions weakened, that ability of workers to negotiate for middle-class wages and sustain their way of life disappeared along with the trade unions.
Why did the unions become so weak?
That's a very complicated process, but I believe, I personally look at it as happening exactly in 1978. America is a place where labor law is paramount. The whole system is driven by legal considerations, in my opinion. And in 1978, we tried to reform our labor law to make it much easier for unions to organize. That bill was defeated by two senators in the Senate. They led a filibuster, and they came two votes short of changing the law. This was at a time when we had a Democratic president, an overwhelmingly Democratic House of Representatives who passed the labor reform bill with no problem. When it went to the Senate, conservative forces woke up to what was happening and said, we need to deal with these trade unions. If this bill goes through, they will reinvigorate and reinvent themselves. And they made sure it didn't happen.
But how much of this is down to the American industry suffering a self-inflicted wound, that they were very flippant and nonchalant about the rise of other countries, particularly China, and as a result, they've paid the price for that?
Yes, that plays into it. But the global competition, I think, hit everyone. I mean, it hit Europe, it hit Germany, all those industrialized countries. They were able to deal with it a little better in terms of workplace and social issues because there's this broad social network in European countries. In the United States, there's very little social support for workers who have lost a job, for example. Unemployment is relatively short. The amounts paid is not very much. And we have none of these other things until recently, like medicine available to the general public. So all of those things play into it. But I think that when manufacturing started to decline, we lacked those social support systems that helped in other countries to weather that storm.
If you tried to introduce them now, you wouldn't get very far in the current American climate either.
No, we're currently dismantling those programs. One of the great issues right now as we speak in America is whether or not we're going to revise the Affordable Care Act. That is what the Obama, I don't want to use the word socialized, but that's the way many people perceive it, that healthcare system is now being deconstructed. The net result is that 20 million more Americans won't have medical care. So that's what we're engaged in, not building up social support.
There is a general consensus, at least outside of the states and with many in the states, that those who voted for Donald Trump expecting him to improve their lot, in that Rust Belt in particular, all they're going to see is their lives getting worse.
Yes, that's quite correct. And I believe that they voted for Trump mostly out of a sense of desperation. I think it's easy to criticize somebody else's political opinions. But what happened particularly in the United States when Donald Trump came up with this story about why America declined, people bought into that, even though it's patently false.
It's a very homely type argument. And the Americans love the past. They thrive on it, the idea of the 50s and the 60s when America was at its peak. But America was a very different country back then. It was arguably a lot more socialist, if I can use that phrase, which is a dirty one, than it ever was. And it's almost false because there were still inherent problems in the American society back then. They just were more tolerant of them.
Right. And I think that America is a particularly schizophrenic society in the sense that we have conflicting beliefs about the worth of individual efficacy. That is, if I work hard, I can go out, I can advance myself, I can get a good job, I can do all of these things. And then at the same time, we have a belief in collective value. And I believe that when unions were strong and powerful in the 1950s and 60s, even up into the 70s, these working class people who had fairly good jobs depended on their unions and they depended on collective action. When those started to disappear, we reverted back to this idea of, well, if we just worked harder or somebody gave us a chance, we would be able to make it.
Yeah, but the Chinese weren't manufacturing things in the 50s and 60s.
No, absolutely.
Now. How come nobody is buying in to the idea that they could have done something other than coal? The 74,000 jobs, I think, is all that's going to be protected by what Donald Trump is doing. Clean coal, contradiction again. When he could have turned around to those workers and said, we're going to incentivize you guys to manufacture windmills because the Chinese need windmills. We can produce windmills and we'll sustain those 74,000 jobs, maybe grow it to 100,000. Nobody seems to be willing to entertain that argument because of the dirty connotations of green energy as far as Trump is concerned. I mean, do people not see that?
I think they see it exactly, but it's hard to explain, but I've been down in that coal country. I'm a labor arbitrator. I used to arbitrate cases down in District 32, which is Fairmont, West Virginia. That's the heart of Appalachian coal country. I can assure you that these people are very proud. They're very self-reliant. They believed in unions because they worked for these coal companies where it was apparent to them that they needed to have some form of resistance to these coal operators. But once coal starts to disappear, they're left virtually with nothing. And what's taken the place, I believe, in that part of the country and in other areas of devastation, economic devastation, is opioids. And we now have, yes, we now have what many people describe as a disaster. It's a calamity of opioid drug prescription.
You paint a very grim picture, Ray.
Yes.
How do you come back from that?
There's always hope. As somebody pointed out, Bernie Sanders had a tremendous following, and he was able to capture a large part of the vote. Many people now, we look back and we think, well, if only Bernie had been the nominee, we might have won. So there is a schizophrenic attitude in America. It's really divided, in my opinion, along the lines of geography and culture. And if you look at a map of the states that voted for Donald Trump, these red states, they're in the heart of the United States, they're in the deep South, and these have always been traditionally anti-union areas.
So blue at the edges, red in the middle.
Yes.
Do you think that as Donald Trump's presidency goes on, and I note there was a report I read yesterday that he's already started a re-election campaign.
Yes.
Not giving himself much time to succeed in his first term. Do you think that they will turn on him ultimately? Is it inevitable when they see that their lives get worse and that he doesn't deliver on the promises that he made that they will no longer support the billionaire Donald Trump.
The most recent data I read gives him about a 50% chance of finishing his first term, and he's already talking about a second term. I don't think that will happen. The problem is Mike Pence, the vice president, is from the state of Indiana. The state of Indiana was one of the leaders in this deindustrialization, anti-union effort. Indiana used to be a very strong manufacturing state. That manufacturing left, and when it left, Pence laid a lot of blame to the unions, saying, well, if you'd only agreed to work for lower wages, maybe we could have saved this. And Mike Pence led a charge in Indiana to abolish union security.
Well, it paints a very grim picture. I'd be interested to hear from union members here, because we're reasonably strong trade union sector, particularly in the public sector. I fear that in the private sector, it's going the way that you're talking about how it's gone in the US. We'd like to hear your thoughts. 53106 for your text messages. But for now, Ray Hoglier, a professor of management at Colorado State University, thank you very much for joining
us. Thank you.